you add a little Italian to it. And now your hosts, Paul Capelli and Stephen Crutchfield.
Ciao a tutti, everybody. This is Stephen here. Welcome to Living Villa Capelli. A very quick intro. Another special episode where we have a special guest. Miss Anna Vocino is joining us again. So I want to give you a little bit of a heads up on that. And I did record this with the remote mic. So for those of you who aren't familiar, the sound's going to be a little tinny here and there, but I think it came out okay. And Paul and Anna just can't help themselves. So this is an explicit episode. Just be aware. And without further ado, here's our podcast with Anna, where we're talking orecchiette with Broccoli Rob.
Ciao tutti.
Buonasera.
Buonasera.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh my God. We're so excited.
It's the voice. It's the voice.
A little Italian in it.
Ooh. Yeah. Do you have any Italian in you?
I 50%.
Oh, I was going to say, would you like some?
So right away after Marcus is explicit already.
Okay. Yeah. So that is the voice of Anna Vocino, who's here with us after a five-year
let's not age me more than I am.
5-year absence when she was here. She was here when she was 15.
Right.
And now she's 20.
Barely legal.
Yeah, baby.
This is going to be an obscene episode.
Of course.
Of course.
So if the children are in the room, you can tell them to leave now.
Right.
I love that you give the disclaimer. Stephen actually cares
about
the not corrupting children. We don't.
I don't care about children. Yeah. I have 3 children, but I care about my children. Your children, I could care less.
OPK, I call it. Other people's kids.
No.
It's OPK.
Is it OPK like the... Who was that murderer? The... Kill,
strangle, kill,
no, torture,
kill,
yeah. Jim Tan Laundry,
KT, something out, TK, or something, whatever you want, like John Wayne Gacy kind of guy.
They all have 3 names.
Yeah. That's right. I'm only Paul Capelli. I have no middle name.
No, you're not a serial.
But we should point out that Anna is here not via Skype this time. She's actually live in the room. That's why the room is a little tinny here.
I just posted a picture of her on Facebook.
Yes.
To verify my existence.
Yes.
So, Vinny, where are you? You're not here. Anna?
Oh, he's gonna be so pissed.
I know.
I told him that I might come down here. This was kind of a whirlwind thing.
Yeah, like, really quick.
I weaseled my way into a free trip to Paris.
Yes.
And then I was like, they didn't book me a hotel for the last 2 nights. And I was like, well, what if I flew to Italy?
That's
and
right.
Then I made it happen.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Ryanair.
And we're happy.
Yes, I'm happy to be here.
Yes. Ryan Scare.
Yes.
Oh, well, now you tell me.
No. No, it's actually U.S. Scare. U.S. Air.
We're giggling about something that you guys don't know.
Know about, yes.
So actually, we're all sitting here, all 3 of us sitting here naked.
Yeah. Yeah, let's paint a picture. We're naked, we're oiled up, with Villa Capelli olive oil.
And we have the twister mat on the floor.
Twister is going to ensue.
Being oiled up in an Italian parlor... is not damaging to the furniture because, as we all know, Italian furniture is covered in plastic.
Of course. Of course. You have to protect the furniture.
Anyway.
All right, so, what are we talking about? I want to hear you guys. You guys are going to debate some Broccoli Rob recipes? Is that what's happening?
And then, well, Anna can't taste them, but maybe she'll judge. Or she can add color commentary as we go.
I want you guys to make your recipes, mm-hmm. and then we have a taste test.
Yes.
Oh, that'd be
blind taste.
Well, I don't know if we can find this one, though, unfortunately.
Stephen, by the way. Okay, here's the big problem with Stephen. One of the big problems with Stephen.
Oh, boy.
Being from Texas, all-American idiot that he is. But he doesn't have an AR-15.
He doesn't even flinch.
I know, he doesn't. He's so used to it.
You guys are the cutest. I swear to God.
This December, we'll just like start leading up to now. We're going to be together 20 years.
Unbelievable. Congratulations.
Right. Thank you. If Stephen makes it.
Why wouldn't Stephen make it?
Because I might kill him.
You're not going to kill him because you love it.
Okay. But that's beside the point.
How Italian men
are. Are we going to get married on our anniversary?
No, we're going to get married before our anniversary.
You guys are going to get married?
Yes.
Yeah.
When, where? Are you going to divulge the details?
Well, here. Hello.
Here.
Because they just passed the law in Italy.
That we can get married. Yeah.
What? You guys buried the lead. I've been here for like hours. This is amazing.
Yes.
Congratulations. Oh, I'm so excited.
Stephen's pregnant.
I thought you were showing me. Yeah. I'm just kidding. Oh. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Steven is the buffest, most cuttest, hottest dude.
No, I wish. Not anymore.
But anyway, so what we were talking about earlier is that Steven has a big problem with Broccoli Rob, which he likes to destroy the bitterness, which is the essential flavor of Broccoli Rob.
Right.
So he likes to, like, what do you do, parboil it? What do you
we're going to get into that.
I am getting into that.
Let's get into that right now, because we can go to different parts. You can have your recipe, and I'll have mine.
No, it's not about recipes.
Not recipes. It's, they're different techniques.
It's philosophies.
Philosophies. Okay, yes.
I love it when my two dads fight.
Well, should we start out? I'm going to be with my little educational here for the podcast.
Here we go.
Right, no, because I don't know if a lot of listeners know what Broccoli Rob is.
Because actually, like, how would we find it in an American grocery store?
So, you want me to go? Yeah, and then you can cut in. Yeah. I will say it's spelled, just so you guys know, broccoli, and then Rob, R-A-B-E, or R-A-A-B is another version. It's also called rapini sometimes. Mm-hmm. In Puglia, it's called?
Cime di rape.
Which basically translates to?
The head of the rapa. Root.
Yeah. Right. So it's so it is kind of in that same, it's in the mustard family. It does have a very bitter taste. Depending on how you cook it, that can preserve. Go ahead.
Is it broccoli?
No, it's in the more of the mustard.
It looks like it.
It looks like broccoli. I don't know. Maybe broccoli is part of the mustard family.
It might be. I don't know. But I don't know. It's part of the mustard family. It has little, it gets little heads. That look like broccoli head.
He said head.
He said heads. You're talking about dicks. This episode is about dicks.
But these are small. These are small heads, not big heads like broccoli. So you get small little heads that look almost like broccoli.
Right.
But the entire plant is edible, from the stems to the buds to the leaves. Mm-hmm. Depending on where you are in Italy, up north, they'll actually throw the heads away and eat the leaves.
Yeah, which I find incredible.
I do too.
Wait, what?
That's what my mom said.
And then actually here, a lot of times, some people throw away the leaves and only eat the heads. Because we personally eat everything.
The head, by the way, is the flower.
Right.
Yeah, and the flowers are edible as well.
Yes.
Actually, yeah. So everything's pretty much edible. Like I said, it has a bitter, spicy, peppery taste. There are ways we'll talk about to mellow that out.
If you want to.
Question. Yes. Is this the same as broccolini?
Yes.
Like baby broccoli.
Pretty much. It looks exactly the same.
Like in the States, you can get broccolini. It has like a tiny broccoli head, a long stem, and a bunch of leaves on it.
Yes. Okay. So that would
great.
Be
great. I can definitely participate in this conversation because I have a good recipe for that.
Oh, okay. Good.
Because here it's called broccoletti.
Okay.
Instead of broccolini.
Okay.
And it is a cool temperature. It's a winter plant.
Yes.
So you can find it sometimes late fall, early spring, but
it's a winter plant like cabbage, even lettuce.
Yeah.
You know, here in the summer, because it gets so hot, you really can't grow a lot of those things. You know, any type of lettuce, endive, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, all those are winter plants. So if you're in a climate area where you can have a winter garden, those are the things that you plant in the winter. Here, where we are down south, everything pretty much dies off in the summer. You know, you would think, oh, summer, tomatoes, I guess, do well.
Right.
But other than that, there's not much going on.
And zucchini.
And
zucchini eggplant, come on.
I guess.
I get tired of zucchini eggplant.
Okay. I get tired of you.
Yeah.
Oh, did I say that?
Goes the dynamite.
I know.
I love it.
I think when Anna gets her...
You guys fight some more. It's fun.
And when Anna gives her comments later, she has to do it in the voice of racist Paula Deen at some point.
Okay, no problem.
Because I love racist Paula Deen that she does. Mm.
The more I drink, the more I turn into racist Paula Deen.
Okay, good.
Did you tell them we're drinking martinis right now?
Oh, no. We're doing our summer drinks. We have three martinis in front of us.
And?
Not three each, but one.
Garnished with? Our own, excuse me, I have a mouthful of...
Everybody loves it when you eat on a podcast.
No, we're going to get hate mail right away. They're all sending...
Our martinis are garnished with caper berries. So for those of you who don't know, caper bush, beautiful bush, thank you, You pick the buds off the plant to make capers, and you pack them in salt. If you don't pick the buds then open up into the most spectacular, beautiful flowers imaginable. Very delicate flowers. When the petals fall off the flowers, the pistil continues to grow. The pistil then becomes the seed pod, which are caper berries. Then we take those caper berries off the bushes, and we brine them in vinegar, water, and salt. And then that becomes a great garnish for martinis, or if you just want to eat caper berries, sort of like pickles.
What's amazing about you is that you're never going to go hungry, because you'll go find shit and pick it and cook it and eat it.
Well, and these we'd find in Gravina, which is 30 miles away. There's like these bushes that are literally growing off of cliffs. And Paul and his daughter are hanging off of cliffs picking these berries off of.
Yeah. And, yes.
Exactly. It's like crazy.
And we also find them growing along the seashore here down south.
Yeah.
But you know what you were just saying about finding stuff and eating it. It is pretty much what I teach my children when they come here, that living in a place like this, you'll never go hungry.
But see, that's so great, because we're so trained to go see everything packaged in the grocery stores. But even just walking in your backyard, you're like, that's that. And I thought to myself, I don't think I've seen kale growing on a kale plant. And I was like, oh, yeah, that is kale. Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Those are kale leaves attached to stems.
Most people have never seen a caper bush.
Yeah.
Pomegranates you saw today.
That was amazing.
Wild Swiss chard growing in the garden.
Which I wouldn't have recognized that.
No.
Where's the Swiss chard?
It's all like speckled throughout the garden.
Oh, yeah?
By the pomegranate trees.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Huh, cool.
A lot of this stuff, a lot of these greens are meant to be bitter. And that is one of the properties of greens anywhere, whether it's chicory, which we also pick in the fields. You know, many of us Italian-Americans used to get very embarrassed by our grandmothers going out into the fields and picking these chicory plants where dogs would go and piss, basically. But, you know, you wash it off. Exactly.
Off, yeah. Well, I hate to break it to you, Americans. Your workers who are picking all of your fruits and vegetables are pissing in the fields
anyway. And you know what? The piss that they're putting on those plants actually keeps them probably from killing you, like, you know, happens with strawberries in California and all that stuff. But, one of the great things about these wild greens is that they're high in iron, antioxidants, everything else. You can't eat a healthier meal than going out, picking different types of wild chicories, wild baby fennel. You make a stew that is just killer. And then if you want, you make what is now known in the States as Italian wedding soup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you roll up about 100 little tiny meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
You put it in there and you cook it all up with some cheese and baby.
Well, I think I need to make an NSNG wedding soup for the next cookbook.
Yeah.
It's easy. Yeah.
That'd
be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of nutrition, Paul kind of, Paul alluded to it. I was next on my notes, just so you guys know. Broccoli rabe is one of the most nutrient dense foods on the planet.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with antioxidants. This is my notes I'm reading. 3.5 ounces provides half of your daily requirements of vitamins A and C. It's also a good source of folate, potassium, fiber, and calcium. And, you know, all the antioxidants obviously do all the things antioxidants do. Slow aging, stronger bones, less inflammation, cancer prevention, blah, 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 blah.
But I will say one thing, though, that we also watch out for here where we live in farmland, basically. You should only pick these greens in uncontaminated places.
So the wild greens.
The wild greens.
Yeah.
You should make sure that they're like fields that have been gone fallow, where people are not throwing herbicides and that kind of stuff in them.
Yeah.
That's the stuff you should pick.
But so here's what my question was earlier when you're talking about, I just stop on a cliff and pick some stuff. I just feel like, is that not somebody's property? You can just stop and pick. Like, how do you find a place that's not contaminated?
Well, this particular ones are public spaces. Those kind of places are public spaces.
The places that are not contaminated are pretty much, I can't say just public spaces, but if you're walking along a cliffside and you see caper bushes growing out of the rocks, you can bet that those have not been sprayed by anyone.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
You know what I mean? That
so
kind of stuff.
It's really the cultivated places that are more dangerous.
But I will say, some of these wild greens, this is my question, are some of them technically what we would call weeds, so herbicides would have killed them anyway?
Because the herbicides would have killed them for that one season, but then they grow back. So the herbicides kill the plant that has grown that year, but then when it grows back again, there's herbicides still in the soil.
It absorbs it.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So
That's the one thing too. A lot of these plants are considered by a lot of people like the dandelion.
Right.
Dandelion's big here, but obviously in the States it's considered,
which is why we joke and we make fun of our grandmothers going out along the highways picking dandelions from the highways. But those are places that no one would waste their money throwing herbicide in.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, they would just cut it with lawnmowers.
Aren't all the bitter qualities of the greens like what makes it healthy?
I think so too.
That's
I agree.
The iron. The bitterness
is the iron.
Is the iron mostly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what makes them healthy. So getting back to the bitterness and the iron. Broccoli rabe, for me, should have a bitter taste to it.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, segue before even then, because we're going to describe, or because we'll get into the recipes and then we'll go back and forth. But describe orecchiette, because we kind of got into this in one podcast.
Orecchiette is a typical Puglia pasta that is called orecchiette now. Because they say it looks like little ears, but it doesn't really.
Which is the direct translation of the word.
Yes. It doesn't really look like little ears, because little ears would not be completely circular, right? They would have one side that is attached to your head.
True.
Right? So it's really more like capelletti, which would be like little hats or little... They look more like little baby diaphragms.
They do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, they really do.
They do.
Yes. I remember the lady came when we were here last time, and she was teaching everybody how to make it. She'd roll the thin thing and then go with the knife.
They make it look so easy, but it's not.
It's a technique. You can tell she's been doing it a while.
So, in the old days and in the local dialect here, they're not really called orecchiette. They're called strascinati. Strascinare in Italian means to drag along. So you roll out this dough like you used to do with Play-Doh.
Mm-hmm.
Then you
like
get
a thin pipe.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Then you get a sort of a butter knife that cuts through it, and you roll it with your forefinger and your thumb. You roll it with your forefinger to make the indentation, and then with your thumb you roll it back the other way, and it makes this little yarmulke.
Yeah.
It's a yarmulke is a really good description.
Yeah.
It's like a tiny yarmulke.
Yeah. A yarmulke diaphragm. Like if you can insert a yarmulke to prevent
pregnancy.
Getting pregnant. Yeah.
That would make it
about a centimeter or two big.
Right.
That's it's funny because I can tell Paul's mom is getting comfortable with thinking I know the dialect, because the other day she asked me for the, how do you say it again?
Strascinat.
The strascinat con broccoli rabe. I was like, I was leaving the room and I turned around to her and I was like, you want the orecchiette with broccoli rabe, right? Like she said it, I had to like double check.
And the fact of the matter is that there are different types of strascinati, which are all basically done the same way. You roll out the dough into a little tube like you would do with Play-Doh, and then you can roll it differently. There's another one called manate, which is, if you look at it, you can see where the indentation of three fingers go in, and it becomes a longer piece of pasta. But the good thing about the difficulty about making orecchiette is they make it look very, very easy when you see it on TV and stuff. But it is very difficult, like Stephen said.
Yeah.
But when you mistake when you make a mistake with strascinati or orecchiette, that then becomes a cavatello. Cavatelli pasta, because it's cavatelli is the same thing as orecchiette, but not opened.
Right, it's just rolled up. It's like
exactly.
A little, yeah, it's like a little tiny open tube kind
of. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Sort of, yeah. Yeah. I'll have pictures of getting this on.
We're getting very technical.
Now I love pasta.
Right.
Oh, no. Gluten no. Yes.
Always.
Yes.
Always.
I'll have pictures of all these at livingvillacapelli.com. I don't know what episode this is. Slash 40.
4,000,063.
No, I believe it's slash 42. So I'll say that now.
42.
Oh,
I know
all.
Nothing. Compared to Anna, who's done 5 billion.
I know, right?
All right, so why don't you get in now? We've covered the basics of what our ingredients are. Mm-hmm. Do you want to cover the recipe of what?
Do you guys each have your favorite way to make it?
I have a different way. Yeah, now? Yeah, that's two different ways.
You're
slightly
say your
different.
Your favorite way to make it.
Yes.
You're say your favorite.
And Paul's is more traditional. Mine is probably more modern. So,
okay. Right.
Yeah, because I like, again, as he says, I like the bitterness taken out. So there's just, it's a slight minor trick to take the bitterness out.
I can't believe you guys are getting married. I'm
right.
So excited. Go, continue.
Yes.
I had to say that.
Well, we're probably one of the few couples in Italy that gets married without being pregnant.
For sure.
That's true.
I wasn't in Italy, but I was an Italian who was pregnant and got married. So I relate. I keep up the stereotype.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm from the South. Like, it's a whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So I used to make orecchiette differently. Orecchiette with cimi di rapa. I used to make it differently. I used to always, I would saute the cimi di rapa, meaning I would put them in a big saucepan with a little bit of olive oil on the bottom, a little bit of water, so you sort of steam them, mm-hmm. And let them cook down. And then I would cook my pasta, and then I would just mix it all together. Then I found out that's not really the way you should do it.
Okay.
So the way you should really do it traditionally is a big pot of water. You throw in all your cleaned and cut up broccoli rabe into the big pot of water, salted. And you let that basically boil,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It becomes boiled vegetables.
How long?
For about 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh, so a little while. Okay.
Yeah,
10
yeah.
About, yeah.
Yeah, because you like to have it really, really soft. Then what you do is, when those are soft, because actually what you do is you cook the leaves and the stems first, and then you put in the heads,
mm-hmm,
the flower heads. Right.
Yeah.
Because if you put those in first, they kind of fall apart.
Yeah.
So you put those in after. Then once that's boiling, you then throw in your orecchiette pasta
into the water with the vegetables.
Wow. You let it all cook together.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then when you spoon it out, you add this mixture of olive oil, lots of chopped up garlic, chopped up anchovies, and some peperoncino or
mm-hmm.
chili pepper,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
if you want.
Yeah.
And you just serve it. No cheese. No,
you don't need the cheese because you have the anchovies
yes.
for the seasoning.
Right, exactly.
Well, one of the traditional things, which I think is sausage, is sometimes served with a lot of it. A lot of traditional.
Yes, sausage. Yeah, but sausage.
Like
sausage,
don't
so much
in the casing,
sausage.
Or they break,
no,
broken
they break
it,
it
up.
Out.
Yeah.
Break
yeah.
It out.
Yeah. But sausage is usually done as, with just broccoli rabe and not pasta as a side.
Side. Yeah, that's how we do it.
Right.
In our
right.
area.
Because
yeah.
sausage or any kind of meat in this part of Italy was a real luxury.
That's
yeah.
true, yeah, that's
you,
true.
You didn't have meat.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reason you ate so many vegetables with pasta was because that was cheaper.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't put sausage in there.
Yeah.
The other traditional thing they do in some parts of Puglia is sort of fry up basically crouton kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Breadcrumbs, you know, chunky breadcrumbs,
okay.
and then you put that over the broccoli rabe in orecchiette yeah. as well.
I'm eating my caperberry.
No.
How was it?
Weird and good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my version is slightly different, just very slightly different. The way you take, so this version, because you're putting the pasta in with the broccoli rabe,
the bitterness of that broccoli rabe has already, it kind of infuses the pasta, and it's already, and it does blanch out a little bit of that bitterness. But basically my version just is you blanch the broccoli rabe for 5 minutes. You take that out. You could put it in cold water if you want, but I usually just take it out, put it directly then into the mixture of the chopped garlic, anchovies, and oil. So then you're basically sauteing that broccoli rabe in with that mixture, and then you cook your pasta totally separate and then mix it together.
Right.
So by blanching it, the bitterness remains in the water and the broccoli rabe then is flavored. That's my preferred method, because I feel like you taste, I'm a big, huge anchovy and garlic fan, so you kind of taste more of it that way, I think. But I don't know. I like both ways.
Yeah, but you taste more of that stuff, but you taste less of the broccoli rabe.
Exactly, which is a personal preference.
So. Yeah, but it's wrong.
Can we make something with anchovy and garlic tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
Because as an American, I'm afraid of anchovy and I don't work with it
very often.
Yeah. So I need to get over that.
That's a secret ingredient.
I know it is. It's like
most sauces.
I like it when it's in stuff, but I'm afraid I've never worked with it.
People think anchovies are hairy.
Yeah, and so I've just been like, take that out and put something else in.
Right.
Honestly, it disappears in this. Like if you do it with by the way, guys, we're gonna have a video of this on the show notes. We did a video when they cooked this recently, so look if you want a step by step video. It'll be on the show notes to walk you through, and you'll kind of see the amounts a little bit, because obviously this is all to taste, how much garlic, how much anchovy. But I would say do not skimp on the anchovies. They disappear in the sauce.
Well, because
they really become nothing. You don't know they're there.
Anchovies, when done right, you don't know what's in there, but you're like, so flavorful. I know that, but because I have not worked with this one. I'm intimidated by it.
At the end of the day, cured anchovies, which is what all anchovies are, right? Cured in salt for a long time. All it is salt, really. It's sea salt.
Yeah.
You're really getting the sea salt.
Which we talked about. It kind of goes back to the day, Roman times.
Yeah.
Roman times, what they would use instead of salt, they would use
garum.
Garum, which is basically fermented, salted fish guts. Wow.
They would keep a jar of it in their kitchen, and they would just throw all the fish guts in there continuously.
Because they didn't waste any part of
it. Exactly. And then they would spoon it out and put it into their sauces. The same way the Japanese do today.
With fish sauce,
fish sauce.
Yeah,
Which you pay a bundle of money for, and all it is fish guts.
But they would use this this was their seasoning of choice pretty much in every single food, but not even just when they're cooking. Like on the table, they would have like a bottle of garum. And they would just...
Interesting.
Yeah, it was like really cool. There's a really cool cookbook. What was that called?
We have it. Apicio.
I think it's supposed to be like one of the oldest cookbooks
in the world.
In the world. Yeah. And this guy took all these, gooses stuffed with like live birds and all this crap.
Right.
Like they did like all these crap.
Weird,
yeah, sort of their version of it.
Check it out, y'all. I'm at a turducken.
Yeah.
Worse than that...
that was racist Paula Deen coming out.
She's coming.
Worse than that, Marlon Brando used to go to a place in Provence.
Oh, you're really going to... Oh, my God.
Marlon Brando used to go to a place in Provence. It was sort of a house of ill repute, but a little bit weird, where... You can cut this out if you want later.
I want to hear this.
Yeah, Marlon Brando would go to this house of ill repute in Provence, where... They would put a goose on his lap, and he would have no pants or underwear on. And he would
An alive goose.
A live goose.
Okay.
A live goose. And he would proceed to insert his member into this goose, and he would he would do what I guess most men would do into a goose's hole.
Would most men do that?
I don't know.
No,
some men.
Hard saying, not knowing.
Right.
I mean.
And then when it was time for his climax.
Yeah. Are people in the room for this?
Yes. There was one person in the room for this. What? Yes.
The goose wrangler?
Yes, the goose slitter. Because
they would kill the goose?
They would slit the goose's throat because then the goose's cloaca would tighten up. At the right moment, and
would
Marlon
feel
Brando,
good on his wiener.
Yes.
That goose really took one for the team.
Now, see, this is one of those good episodes, but now do I leave that in? Do I, like... Because it's a fascinating story, right? But, like, yeah, we could do, we could parlay this into another episode.
It's like, it's fascinating and nauseating.
At the same time. Like, oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Wow.
Where did you hear that one, by the way? I don't even remember you heard that one. You've been telling it for a while. Yeah, because I can... See, I know his stories right away.
So you knew that was coming.
Yeah, I knew that was coming. Oh, that's why I said, yeah, I was like, when he did the same thing with the Vinny podcast, I was like, really, really? You're telling
and
a story?
And now I feel like the guys just have to jerk off into a sock and it's not as exciting.
Right. Or Philip Roth.
Yeah, Fleshlight. Yeah.
Philip Roth, back in the day, which the book that we had to read it actually in high school, Catholic high school, Portnoy's Complaint. Big, huge book, yeah. Very scandalous back in the day, where he would take the liver out of his mother's fridge, and that's what he would masturbate into his mother's liver. Not his mother's liver, the liver that was in his mother's fridge.
There's so much to unpack with that statement. I don't know if we
no,
can.
Portnoy's Complaint, read the book. I mean, it's very explicit.
I'm surprised you read it in school.
Yes, a Catholic school.
What?
A Jewish boy writes a book about masturbation into liver. Obviously, it wasn't pork liver.
When was it
written?
He
keeps kosher, even on his
Yeah.
When was it written?
Probably written in 1960s. So I graduated from high school in 1969?
Wow.
No, 1973, I graduated from high school.
Yeah.
That's when I was born, whatever.
Oh.
Whatever.
Anna just gave her age away.
Oh. I'm 43. Whatever. I don't hide it. I can't hide it.
No.
Okay, so here's what I do with the broccolini, which I guess is the same thing, but I do a very simple, and it was taught to me by an Italian lady, and I call it Noni's broccolini. But it's super simple. It's just basically I like to shave the ends off of the stems, just the very bottom.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, but it's just a thing to make it a little more tender, and chop up six or seven cloves of garlic.
Hold on.
Yeah.
What we do instead of shaving off the ends of the stems, you cut a cross into the bottom of the stem.
Oh, and that does the trick?
Because it opens it up, so it cooks from inside and outside.
Okay.
It's a little faster.
Oh, see, that's
probably
good. I'm going to try that one.
Yeah,
I know. It's kind of...
And it's faster.
I don't always do that if I feel like,
you just cut a little cross.
It's really quick.
What do you call that kind of cutting? Incision. Yeah, sort of. Yeah.
And you use the grandma knife, like a serrated knife. You boom, boom, boom. Yeah. It's very quick.
Yeah.
So I literally throw, after you wash it, don't even take the water off because the water will help it steam, and throw it in with the garlic and the olive oil at a high, and salt it a lot at a high temperature, turn it down and cover it, and just let it kind of steam, and the garlic caramelizes and it seems to take the edge off the bitterness and 15 minutes. But that's it. Like, I don't do pasta, obviously. But, but it's like a simple...
I mean, what I did last time, by the way, obviously, because I didn't do the pasta, I put a fried egg on top. It was really good. A fried egg on top
that's
of it
good.
Was really, really good. Yeah.
That's good.
But you know, the older you get, I think the more you appreciate bitterness.
I agree with that, yes.
I agree. When you're young, you can't handle it.
No.
Your taste buds are
too sensitive. But even you, like, with the... Chippendutz.
Chippendutz are wild hyacinth bulbs that we eat down here in southern Italy. Hyacinth bulbs.
They're super, super bitter. I mean,
And they're bitter, once again, because of the high iron content.
Yeah.
But they're really bitter. They're great for your blood. What's that?
How do you prepare them?
Oh, you can cook them different ways. You have to clean them all off first, of course. And then you can either boil them. And then once they've cooled off, you put them on a plate and you squish them down.
Yeah.
And then you just cover them with olive oil, salt, and pepper, and you eat them like that. Or you boil them, you squish them, and then you batter them and fry them.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
There
everything
is.
Good is fried.
There it is.
Yeah.
Everything is good is fried.
Yes.
Or everything fried is good, actually.
Both.
And just they look like little pearl onions, is what they look like,
and
but they're not.
And they actually, some people do call them cipolline, which means little onions, but they're not onions at all.
Cipolline are little onions.
Yeah, exactly.
Cipolline are actually pearl onions.
Right.
But cipolline,
but like wide, fatter.
Yeah, but they're not. See, they tell
they
you
look that, little planet, Jetson planet.
Exactly,
things.
But they tell you that they're onions, but they're not.
Are those the same thing?
Yes. Whoa. Yes.
You sure made those in some sort of braised, when we were here before, the Cipollini onions, you put them in, you braised them in something.
Right. I think maybe in lamb or something.
You did recently when I was in here at Christmas, you guys did it for lamb.
Yeah, they're actually wild hyacinth bulbs. They're more indigenous to North Africa. Most of them come from Tunisia and those places. They grow in sandy soil. They're a pain in the ass to dig out because they go down about a yard deep into the soil.
Yeah.
So what they do now, when they cultivate them, they put them in big barrels, plastic or wooden barrels.
So they can dig them out easier.
Well, not that they can dig them out. The barrels are split in half and locked so that when they're ready, you just unlock the barrel, open it up, and they just fall out.
So are those the Cipollini onions that I'm buying in the store?
I don't think so. It depends.
It's not the pearl onions. Pearl onions is different.
Sometimes at like Whole Foods, they'll have like those, the flat, wide.
No, those are different.
Those are different. These look like pearl onions. But
no, they look like tulip bulbs.
Oh, okay.
They look like tulip bulbs.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's how you
are. Don't argue with me.
No. And they're usually.
Yeah, you're fighting again.
And usually they're very. I don't know. In the store, we used to get them on Arthur Avenue up in New York, and they're always pretty dirty. They're always like. Because I think if you clean them, they probably would spoil quicker. Yeah. They're usually very dirty, covered in soil.
Soil.
Like a dirty onion, kind of. It's like. They don't clean them ever.
The last time I went to Arthur Avenue, which was probably 6 years ago, they no longer sell them at Arthur Avenue because the. United States Department of Agriculture prohibits them to be imported into any place in the U.S. except for Los Angeles.
Why?
No idea. So they have to go from Tunisia, basically.
To L.A.
To L.A.
Makes no sense.
And then has to go back to the East Coast. So, you know, the price just gets out of control.
Yeah.
And nobody in L.A. eats them.
No. They only eat kale shakes.
Right.
Yeah. All right. We did it.
I already kept the episode. So remember to hit subscribe on your podcast player, whatever it is, so you never miss another episode. Sign up for our newsletter, all that good stuff, guys.
And if you want any of this stuff to taste really amazing, you have to use Villa Capelli extra virgin olive oil.
Why wouldn't you?
Because people might not know.
You guys, if you're listening right now and you haven't purchased Villa Capelli olive oil, I'm sad.
Yeah.
My heart is heavy.
Oh.
You need the oil.
And you need Anna's new book. Is it already available pre-sale or not?
It will be in a few days.
Okay. So by the time I come out, it'll be ready.
Eat Happy Cookbook.
Yes. Where do they get a pre-sale?
Amazon is probably the best.
Oh, go to Amazon. Yeah. Just type in that name.
Eat Happy. It'll be there.
Eat Happy. Absolutely. Paul and I saw a little preview. It looks amazing. It's going to be cool. I want to buy it just for the almond. What do you call those little almond crackers that you have in the book?
Oh, the almond meal pita chips?
Yes.
Ooh.
I'm dying for that one.
We can make that. We can make it with your chickpea and fava.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We'll try it. Yeah. That's good. So I'm excited about that one. So go sign up because I know the book is going to be amazeballs.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Arrivederci.
One and all.
Ciao.